Welcome back to the Megatherium Club podcast. I'm Sean and I'm here with Spencer. If you are new here, we are two entomologists that love all things nature and science, and we were inspired by the original Megatherium Club of the 1800s to create this podcast where we share our love and knowledge of animals, plants, and more with you. We usually discuss fascinating creatures throughout time, and the topics vary from episode to episode. And if you aren't new here, welcome back. We love you guys and appreciate you still tuning in to listen to us ramble about cool shit. How have you
ramble
been, Spencer?
Is the key word. Not too shabby. Now on the Cape of Cod, and it's been raining basically nonstop since I've got here.
What are you doing there?
I'm working at a camp now. Changing it up a little bit, so
there you go. Yeah. I feel you. I just recently switched jobs, but still dealing with wildlife and insects and all sorts of critters. In today's episode, we're going to look at some common misconceptions, things people say regularly or concepts that seem popularly accepted that are actually a bit misleading. For example, in one of our last episodes, we discussed hibernation and whether or not bears actually hibernate. And if you don't know the answer to that, I recommend going back and checking that one out to find the answer. But this was partially inspired by just me hearing some misconceptions, me learning new things recently, and by a really popular topic that's all over social media right now. And Spencer, do you know what I'm talking about? That's just this huge like misconception in science.
Yeah, that birds are real creatures.
No, they are not. Stop lying. They are government. No, I was talking about the dire wolf situation.
Mm-hmm. I had a feeling you were going to talk about this.
I didn't tell you about it, but I keep being asked about it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, the dire wolves are not back, people. And if you weren't aware, and this is the first time you're hearing about it, good job to you for not being sucked into social media. And two, it's about this group of scientists, which I don't even know the name of them off the top of my head. Do you?
I don't know. Right. I didn't really pay that. I mean, I give credit where credit's due, and it's cool that they were developed something interesting, but
it's a bit misleading. So, but what they've done, and some of these articles out there will even like in their article refute their own subject of the article or the title of the article, where these articles are like dire wolves brought back from extinction. And then in the article themselves, it'll say like, well, they aren't actually back from extinction and these animals aren't actually dire wolves, but these scientists genetically modified some wolves to have characteristics similar to what the dire wolf is believed to have had. And now we have, what, two or three of these individuals that are quote-unquote dire wolf-like gray wolves. Right? Yep. Two or three?
Yeah.
I'm saying two or three because I keep seeing one adult picture and two baby pictures, and I think some of them are clones. But here's two things about this. Dire wolves were not wolves. They were more related to jackals. So there's a common misconception. It's called a dire jackal from now on, you know? Like, these things are more closely related genetically to jackals than wolves. And there are some jackals that are miscommonly named that are actually closer to wolves. So yes, it gets a little confusing, but dire wolves don't look like gray wolves. They don't look like anything we have today. And these dogs, which is what is probably more accurate for me to call them, they look like white wolves or like a white shepherd. They're not dire wolves. Some people think they had their DNA spliced into these gray wolves. Like, we took this chunk and we put it into this animal. Well, that's not even the case, as far as I understand. I think they just, like, modified a gene on these wolves to give it a trait more similar to the dire wolf. So they'd even, like, they just took what was there and changed it a bit.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on this, Spencer?
It's interesting, and I think it's a cool leap forward for genetic modifications in developing varieties of animals that may be able to, I don't know, like, it's a cool at, like, let me think.
It's definitely cool that we could do things like this.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
let's keep it, like, together here. We're not, like, we're bringing back extinct animals this way.
Right. We're not on our way to Jurassic Park. We are on our way to developing interesting-looking animals. But we've been doing that for a very, very long time anyway. It's just now we have a different methodology in order to do that.
Yeah, we can skip some of the breeding lines. We can
exactly, which I'm actually going to talk about a little bit later. But anyway,
oh, cool.
So yeah.
First common misconception out there: one, dire wolves weren't actually wolves, but maybe that term is up for debate on what that means. And two, they're not back. All right.
Yeah.
I did see where, and again, it's hard to, like, know what you're reading out there on the internet, specifically over this, what's true or what's not. I saw where they've set aside, like, 2,000 acres to let these, like, three individuals survive. Is that, have you seen that?
I didn't see anything about that, no. But that would be quite interesting. I mean, I don't know what the viability of their reproductive status is. Is it? Can they reproduce? Is that something that they even know yet? I don't know. I didn't read a whole lot about it just because I knew it. Every article I came across, it was way too clickbaity for me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't go into that. And I just didn't really bother to look it up elsewise. So
yeah. Well, yeah. I felt like maybe we could just start it off with a little bit of, like, all right, people, just chill out. Do your research. Dire wolves aren't taking over the planet anytime soon, or if ever, and we're good. Just
No, I completely agree. You know, I'll transition that into something in the same vein. And one thing that irks me when I go to the grocery store, sorry, my allergies are killing me, so I might pause to sneeze every once in a while.
That's
cool. But anyway, you know, you go to the grocery store and you see these different sections, these, you know, organic, non-GMO foods, and then just the regular foods, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The foods for us common folk who don't want to pay three times as much for a banana. When in reality, you're not really getting much of a difference. Now, organic, let's see. Anytime you see a sticker that says organic, GMO free, take it with a very big grain of salt. Now, the thing that people might be more interested in is the use or the not use of pesticides, herbicides, stuff like that when their produce is being grown. And that might have some actual validity to it. If you don't necessarily want something that is continually sprayed with herbicides or pesticides on your food, yeah, I can understand that. But also, you can wash your food. However, this is where it kind of gets interesting. So, genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, are becoming more and more of a hot topic where people are saying that, oh, these things are everywhere. They're so bad for us. We don't actually know how we're genetically modifying them. And it's going to be the end of the world and blah, blah, blah. No, it's not. And we've been genetically modifying things since the dawn of agriculture, like well over 10,000 years we've been doing this. The difference between what we've referred to genetically modifying organisms now is maybe necessarily that we might be inserting genes from other things that make the plants better for the environment that we're growing in. Because when we have a population of billions and billions of people, we need to feed all those people. Now, this is stepping aside from the fact that world hunger is still very much a thing and most people don't get their food, but in reality, like, we still have to grow a lot of food. We wouldn't be able to do that unless if we had genetically modified organisms. We just couldn't do it because we are in a world that is not necessarily adapted to be growing that amount of food for that many people, right? And the food that we have grown, we need to essentially, I'm just trying to get my thoughts here together. Let me go into this. People think that they're inherently harmful, right? Nope, there's no risk to that whatsoever. And they think that genetically modified crops are everywhere. Also not true. But the crops that we do grow, we need to have. I lived in Iowa for a long time. Something like corn, right? Corn is very susceptible to many insects, and a lot of things are going to attack it and destroy it. In addition to fungal diseases, bacterial viruses, all those sorts of things. We need to have a crop that can withstand a lot of that so that we can use less and less pesticides. That's kind of like the circumventing of this all. We want to use less of the things that are actually harmful to one to us, but more so harmful to the environment. And we only can do that through genetically modifying something. Not everyone in the world can survive on pesticide-free, non-GMO foods. We just cannot do that. We do not have the space for that. So we have to make a switch over to genetically modified organisms. And, like, it's not as dangerous as people think it is. For example, when in the 1920s, farmers were starting to use different chemicals and radiation to change the seeds, essentially, and to do what was considered early genetic modification, where they might alter the genes, like up to 300,000 genes within a plant. They weren't controlling what genes were being changed. They were just essentially blasting these things with radiation because it was new technology at the time to essentially alter the genes to see, okay, can we get a mutation that is actually beneficial for us? However, with modern GMOs, they can change up to a few genes at a time and get a healthier plant. And the science still tells us that there's absolutely no harmful aspect to us. It doesn't change the nutrition value. In some cases, it might actually make it better for us. But then it also allows us to be able to essentially, you know, save us from the things that we don't actually want. Like I said, the pesticides and the herbicides. So,
but let's GMOs. I want to pause you right here because I think if we want to go with the corn example, there's to put it in perspective for people, there's two big ways we modify field corn right now. One, we make it Roundup ready. What that means is it's not susceptible to Roundup. It means we can spray acres upon acres with Roundup, killing everything in that field but the corn. So makes it easier for farmers that way. There are downsides and negatives to that. And I think what people try to avoid when they say, oh, I don't want that. I mean, in my experience, there's people out there maybe not necessarily concerned about consuming corn or something that comes from corn, is derived from corn, that has been genetically modified to withstand Roundup. It's the environmental impact that has. So some people prefer to not support, I guess, corn or anything that is derived from that because they know if it has been genetically modified, then Roundup has been used. Right. And I'm spacing on the chemical name right now, which is rather embarrassing after my last 4 years of work. God, that's on the tip of my tongue. But so, because that has negative effects on a lot of wildlife that's near corn, specifically right. Pollinators is what I have the most experience and knowledge in.
Yeah.
And then the other aspect that we modify a lot of corn for is BT. So what we're doing with that is Bacillus thuringiensis. It's a gene that comes from, I believe, a fungus? Or it's bacteria, right?
It's a bacteria.
So this gene allows the corn to produce a protein that crystallizes inside the gut of beetles and or certain Lepidopteran larvae, and it basically just shreds them from the inside out giving them sepsis and they die. So it allows the corn plants to protect themselves from these insect pests. And that sounds great. If you aren't aware of, you know, what that does to you, probably you aren't eating this corn. Because this is field corn, so don't even worry about that. I don't think they're modifying sweet corn, but I could be wrong on that. The one scary thing with BT corn is that you have to plant non-BT corn in the same area that you are growing BT corn so that the insects don't gain resistance to the BT corn. Because with all insects and pests, they will gain a resistance to a pesticide, to corn that produces a crystal that tears them up from the inside out. And so whether that's behavioral or a change in their DNA or their gut composition, something can change. And so you have to plant non-BT corn so that there are certain beetles and caterpillars that will survive and breed and pass on these bad genetics to the rest of the population so that they can continue to then die eating the BT corn. And I hope you're following, because it does get a little complicated there.
Yeah, I'm following.
But there's an issue there, because a lot of research shows that either one, the BT corn is, or the non-BT corn is not being planted appropriately or at this as it should to reduce resistance buildup, and secondly, the insects may be feeding differently on these two types of corn that are in the same field, to where they may be mating at different times. So the insects, like, mating on the BT, their growth is going to be stunted, and they either die or, like, just reach maturity later. And then when they mate, if they've, you know, survived eating the BT, now they're able to pass on this gene at a later time, where they're only mating essentially with others that have, like, survived eating this BT corn.
Mm-hmm.
Increasing their chance of gaining resistance. So
yeah.
It's an interesting topic for sure that we could make an entire episode on, but think those are the two biggest GMOs that people are aware of, and those are almost exclusive to field. They could be modifying sweet corn like this, but I'm not 100%. But
be a vegan and it doesn't matter.
Just
wait, be a vegan.
So all that field corn, that's not going to you.
Oh, I see what you mean.
That's yeah, going to feed some cow. That's going to feed some sheep.
The cows and the hogs.
That's 20% of that might be going to make biofuel or something. But
yeah.
Most of it.
For a second, I was still thinking sweet corn for.
Oh no!
Whatever reason. And I was like, Sean, that's not that. That's vegan. It's vegan.
That's what I eat. Yeah.
sorry for interrupting.
I love this topic.
I knew you were going to have something to say about it, which is why I brought it up. That was like my half example, because I was like, I bet Sean's going to he's going to be able to give me specifics here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was thinking about it. And then, you know, my other topic is a little bit more up my recent alley. So, no, I appreciate you jumping in. I was entirely
expecting me.
Expected and wanted.
Cool. So, but yeah. I think we should definitely, like, not be afraid of GMOs, unless you're trying to, like, support environmentalism in some case. And, you know, I don't support things being covered with Roundup, whatever. Fair. Also, do you eat meat? Because that's another topic. I mean, like, where do you know, want to protect the environment and not want to protect the environment? So it's a touchy subject, and it's a fun subject to discuss, and I like discussing it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I don't know. I just, all I hear is just so many not necessarily negatives, just wrong things about it.
Oh, and another thing is people go, oh, it's organic, I'm not eating pesticides. Bullshit. Guess what? There's specific pesticides listed for use on organic crops because they still need to be protected from these insects and these diseases. Yep. They're just like, quote unquote, more natural.
Wait, are you telling me that some person doesn't go out there every day with a brush and brush these apples off?
Yeah. They actually just hired thousands of laborers to go out and hand pick off caterpillars and beetles, and they go, it's organic, and they only raised it like a dollar or two, and you're like, god, that makes sense. Nope. Like, no. It's only more expensive because the consumer thinks it should be.
Exactly.
It's misconception. That's a good one. I like it.
Basically, you don't have to worry a whole lot when you're at the grocery store. And in most cases, you don't necessarily have to pay more for nothing.
Just wash your food.
Yeah. That's all it is. It's like, wash your food. Just rinse it under the sink and you'll be all right.
Yeah. If you aren't washing your produce, you're asking for things. Like, diseases is what you're asking for.
Yep.
Well, that's cool.
Well, thank you. No, I appreciate you you providing us really specific examples.
Yeah. So. That's much better than my first misconception, but this is a fun episode because we just said misconceptions, and that's pretty
didn't go anywhere
wide.
From there.
my first one, so I had like a very common theme because I think what inspired this, I think I'll later go on to say, but my first one I wanted to discuss is that people think crocodiles are dinosaurs. You know, I always hear people referring to crocs and gators as real life dinosaurs. No, you're wrong. Stop saying this. Crocodiles and their relatives, alligators, gharials, caimans, etc., are not dinosaurs. Now, I do understand that over time, the term dinosaur has evolved, no pun intended, to refer to something as very old. As in, wow, we have a lot of dinosaurs in the government, or why do we keep electing dinosaurs to serve as president? But I digress. Yes, crocodiles are part of an ancient lineage that dates back millions and millions of years, but in phylogenetic sense, they are not dinosaurs. Crocodilia, the group that contains all living crocodilians, and Dinosauria, the group that contains all dinosaurs, share a common ancestor. Both groups make up what is known as archosauria. Reptiles that do not fall under this term include snakes, lizards, and turtles. Yes, crocodiles and dinosaurs are both reptiles and both archosaurs. But dinosaurs are not crocodilians, and crocodilians are not dinosaurs. Now, this is often used to refer to tuatara, a very special type of lizard endemic to New Zealand, that they are also a living dinosaur. Wrong again. We just discussed how lizards are separate from dinosaurs and archosaurs. They fall under the group called Lepidosauria, and I probably mispronounced that. But if you really care about my pronunciation, go look it up yourself. No, sorry. If you want to see a modern-day dinosaur, just go outside. Look up towards the sky. I guarantee you, nearly all of you will see an example within minutes.
I have some in my backyard right now.
I can look through my window and see them flying around and sitting on trees. Yeah. And I am talking about birds. All birds are dinosaurs. They are often described as avian dinosaurs, but that is under the Dinosauria branch on the phylogenetic tree. And yes, this also means that birds are reptiles. I probably shouldn't go further down that road right now, though. So another thing with crocodiles. The crocodiles we have today are not the same we had millions of years ago. A lot of them probably looked very, very similar. But because of evolution, the genetics of today's species are not the same as the genetics of the ones millions of years ago. So they are a new species of crocodile. Does that ever bother you, Spencer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially when people, you know, take this same vein of thinking and apply it to something like creationism or whatever. Like the old humans evolved from monkeys kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Where, no, I think... no, no, No. We're not monkeys. So it does bother me, but I get where it comes from, just because, you know, you do look at a crocodile and because that body plan mm-hmm. works so well for what they need it to do, that it just is, well, the changes that have happened, like you said, the modern crocodiles are as evolved as anything else on the planet currently, but they just look more basal, or the old
ancient
verbiage, yeah, ancient or primitive. But no, it works so well that they don't need to change. There's no selective pressures on them, right?
Yeah.
So, well, there are, but
none that have drastically changed them.
Exactly. Yeah. I love me some good old crocodilians.
Oh yeah. I love them too. Just, they're not dinosaurs.
Nope. And that's one of my favorite facts to tell kids too, is, you know, the dinosaurs went extinct. Did they?
Nope.
Did they?
Not all of them.
You're like, I bet you've seen a dinosaur. And they're like, what? Yeah, and then most of them will say, like, crocodile or alligator? No. That little black cap chickadee in your backyard. Yeah.
That little robin that's waking you up in the morning. Worm.
So, yeah, that's a good one. That's a really good misconception.
My next one, I'll continue because it's, like, right down the same type of path. And this is actually what kind of inspired it, because it was something I kind of learned. I realized I was incorrect for many years on my understanding of this, but I'm talking about pronghorns, aka the pronghorn antelope, aka the American antelope, aka the prairie antelope, etc. The misleading info here is that pronghorns are not actually antelopes. That blew my mind when I learned that. I was like, wait, what? I've always told people, oh yeah, we have an antelope here. Yeah, there's only one, but we have an antelope here. Nope, we don't have any antelopes in North America.
Were you just telling me this a while ago? I think you might have mentioned this to me.
Oh, probably.
Somebody mentioned this to me because I also learned this recently and had my mind blown.
Could have been. It gained this colloquial description or title because it looks similar to the old world antelopes and fills a similar niche. Well, ichthyosaurs and dolphins both look similar and filled similar niches, but dolphins are not marine reptiles and ichthyosaurs are not mammals. The pronghorn and antelopes are an example of parallel evolution, while the ichthyosaurs and dolphins are an example of convergent evolution. Pronghorns are actually more closely related to giraffes, coming from the Antilocapridae family, than antelopes and other hooved animals, which are in the Bovidae family, bovines. Giraffes and okapi share a common ancestor, and that ancestor shares a common ancestry with pronghorns. So if you can see or imagine the phylogenetic tree in that sense. This split into the giraffes group one direction and the pronghorns the other occurred tens of millions of years ago. Something that sets pronghorn away from antelopes is their horns. Like giraffidae species today, they have bony cores that protrude from their head. In giraffes and okapi, this is covered with skin. In pronghorn, this is covered in a keratinous sheath, which is shed and regrown annually, similar to a deer, but unlike any antelope where those are grown continuously and never shed them. And pronghorn's horns are branched and antelopes are never branched. That's really cool.
That makes sense. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I always thought they were antelopes. And I was told people, like, yeah, they're so fast because they learned, they had to evolve to run away from, like, a super cheetah in North America, which is also probably not true. And actually, the speed, so these, if you weren't aware, pronghorns are some of the best endurance animals on the planet, like arguably better than humans with like it's a close competition there. And the pronghorns, the thing that's like pushing them to be faster and faster is not necessarily because of some predation, because nothing can match them right now and they're still getting faster. is sex.
Nice.
It's just sex drive. It's competition between each other. The faster one gets the girls, I guess. And that's it. That's the sexual, the evolutionary pressure there is sex. Not nice. Super cheetahs.
Not
super cheetahs. I used to know a guy. I guess I still know of the guy. I met this guy called Bernd Heinrich. Great guy, German zoologist, naturalist, ultra runner. And he was part of a group that was trying to see whether or not a human could chase down an antelope through persistence hunting. I don't think they did. Crazy group of people. They tried this. But the issue was, so if you aren't aware what persistence hunting is, it's you just run down an animal until it dies. Like, a lot of animals can't cool their bodies and keep running. They pant to expel right. heat, and a lot of animals, well, quadrupeds, if they're running, their stride is in correlation with their lung expansion and compression, so they're limited on their breathing capabilities, and so they have to stop and pant to expel the heat. Our stride is not in correlation, or like, our lung does not expand and compress with each stride because our bodies are upright and we're really good at endurance running. And so there are tribes in Africa that hunt down antelopes just by running them down until they have like heat exhaustion. And so people are trying to see if they could do that to pronghorns. And I don't think they were successful, but the issue was they would lose track of like an individual pronghorn as soon as it got over a hill. So that was like part of the issue there. It wasn't like Africa. I'm sure there's hills in Africa, but it's a lot flatter there than where these guys were, and probably a lot less experience in these African tribes as well. But they would lose sight of the antelope, and then by the time they figured out which antelope they're heading back for or chasing after, it could recover enough to keep running. Cool thing. Pronghorns are cool.
Pronghorns are cool. And I didn't realize that they were like the closest living relative to giraffes.
Well, okapis are, and then pronghorns.
Well, yeah. I meant like...
outside of that. Yeah. So, I also didn't realize that, but it makes sense with their horns.
Yeah.
But giraffes don't shed their horns either, so they're like...
That's true.
Weird deer giraffes. Look like an antelope. They're like their own thing.
Their own thing. Well, that's kind of cool. Giraffes are actually something I was considering talking about. And maybe I'll do a quick shout out to it. Did you ever, when you were learning about evolution in, I don't know, middle school, high school, ever see like the picture of a tree and a deer? And then the next image is like a slightly higher tree and then a slightly longer necked deer. And then the next one was a taller tree with a longer necked deer until basically it became a giraffe. I'm saying deer.
Yeah.
Is just a filler word there. But did you ever see that image? I remember learning that giraffes have long necks because they were like competing with the trees to get higher and higher and taller and taller.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I saw this.
Yeah, but that's kind of like one of the more famous cases of this is how evolution works. The trees don't want their leaves eaten, so they get taller. And then the giraffes grow longer necks so they can eat the leaves that are now higher.
Of course.
And it makes sense, but probably not the case. But the reason I didn't want to talk about this one in depth was because everything that I read about it ended in like, we don't actually know. So that's kind of where this is headed to. We don't know why giraffes have super long necks. There's probably multiple reasons, but one of them is for sure not solely because they need to reach higher and higher leaves in these taller and taller trees, like these acacia trees that they eat. Instead, there's a fence, or on the other side of the fence, there's a group of people that essentially say it's because giraffes use their necks in mating rituals. So male giraffes will swing and bash their heads against each other. And when you have a longer neck, you're able to essentially swing your head harder and smack your competition down even more. Which is why their antlers or horns, you know, are these blunt objects and not these long, necessarily pointy structures, because they're used for bashing and not necessarily grappling down. Like you might see in like an elk or a deer or something like that. Then everything was like, well, what? Why do females have long neck? Hey, well, maybe it is because they were eating trees. But then giraffes, like the cost to having a super long neck, a lot of these scientists were basically saying it's not worth it to be that tall just to be able to eat leaves. Because there's so much more that needs to go into having and sustaining a head and a neck that is that long. Like their hearts have to pump so hard in order to get blood up to their heads.
Oh, yeah.
That eating leaves is solely not a reason in order to evolve a heart that is able to do that. Mating, that's another even more hardy driver of evolution.
Sex, but, man.
Sex, right? Sex sells. But, and then the other case was, but a lot of giraffes don't necessarily, they're not like straining their necks and reaching up to the top leaves all the time. Most of them are eating at shoulder length or below, and they have to drink water. Have you ever seen how difficult it is for a giraffe to drink water? they have to spread their front legs out in a split and then reach down and hope that a crocodile doesn't bite them on the head. Like,
yep.
Being able to eat the highest leaves is not the driving factor, at least according to some scientists. But they don't actually know 100% why it is the case, which is why I didn't want to talk about it super in depth. But I thought it was interesting, and since you brought up giraffes, I had to throw it in there.
Yeah, so. That's cool.
In the same vein, not really at all, completely changing the subject away from giraffe biology into human biology. So let's take a moment and understand some basic human genetics. Every human is made up of trillions of cells. Now, disregarding the fact that we have lots of bacteria inside of us that we have to have in order to live, but our cells, are the cells that make us us, are composed of 46 chromosomes, two pairs of each chromosome. So 23 pairs times two, or two pairs or whatever, is 46. Now, 44 of them are what we call autosomes. They determine a lot of our body plans. However, the important ones that I want to talk about here are the sex chromosomes. There's two of them, and you've probably heard of them. I'm not talking to you, Sean. I'm talking to our audience. The XX and the XY chromosomes, respectively, in terms of how they're grouped together. Now, we typically think of, if you're born as a female, you have XX, and if you're born as a male, you have XY, and that's it. That's the basics, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more complicated than that. And this is what's been irking me, especially in our new political, well, not our new, our ongoing political climate, is people hijacking what they believe is basic science and then getting it completely wrong because of this transgender movement that's allowing people to express their gender ideology in because of that's who they are as a person. And the other side, the right wing side, the MAGA people are saying, nope, if you're born a male, you're a male. If you're born a female, you're a female. Stepping aside from biology here, sex and gender are completely two different things. Gender is a social construct. Sex is a biological construct. But now, stepping back into the biological construct, it's even way more complicated than that. You can't just say if somebody has an XY that they're a male. And that's why there's like some people that are like, let's not call them sex chromosomes anymore, because it's way more complicated than that. So let's get into it and some variations on that. And the statistics here are what absolutely blows my mind. So there are abnormalities that can occur when a fetus is developing, even before that, when a zygote is developing within the womb of some person. And what can go wrong is cells can split unevenly, and you can get essentially a cell line within your body that has an extra chromosome. It's called a trisomy, and we as a society are not unfamiliar with trisomies. One of the most common genetic trisomies is Down syndrome, which is brought about by three copies of the chromosome 21. However, in the sex chromosomes, you can have different combinations because there's two different sex chromosomes. So one is XXY, that's known as Klinefelter syndrome. You can have XXX, which is called trisomy X, because you have three X's, and you can have XYY. Now, there are even more variations on this. You can get tetrasomies, where you have four copies, and you can have all the different combinations of the four. And there are pentasomies. Usually people don't survive something like that because, you know, the cells just aren't viable. However, let's get into some of these more specific ones that are way more common, than you might think. XXY, or Klinefelter syndrome, it affects 1 in 600 male births. 600. One out of every 600 people have some sort of cell line within their body that is Klinefelter. And essentially, they just have an extra copy of their X chromosome. Now, most people never go diagnosed in their entire life, but they have two X's and they have one Y. So two X's, if we're going with the basics of this MAGA biology, means that they're female, but they have a Y, so that means they're male. So what do we consider them biologically? Well, biologically, we consider them males, but they're going to have, they might have differences essentially in the phenotypes, the stuff that actually shows, but they might not. It's a scale, and it can range from being pretty debilitating for this person to, again, they just never get diagnosed at all. So some people are just infertile. They might have low testosterone, low muscle tone, osteoporosis, bone decay. They might have delays in their speeching or learning disabilities. It can bring about things like autism, ADHD, depression, anxiety, things that a lot of people have, right? So even with this first one, it's like, okay, we're getting into interesting territory, right? Trisomy X, where you have XXX. They call, I believe another version of this is, they call them super females, which I thought was kind of interesting. This happens in 1 in 1,000 female births. And again, it's very rarely diagnosed. And if you're going to diagnose it, it's usually during pregnancy when they do genetic testing. So for most of time up until recently, if you had XXS, you probably didn't know that. And again, just like these other ones, it's a scale where some people might have way more symptoms than others, but it's very much the same. Developmental delays, learning disabilities, mood disorders, ADHD, and stuff like that, and possibly infertility. It's quite interesting. And the last one that I'll mention for the trisomies is XYY, also known as Jacobs syndrome. It's about 1 in 1,000 male births. You have just an extra Y. Super males, as I've heard it's been called as well. So again, the symptoms are very, very similar to the other ones, essentially. But what I wanted to kind of hammer down is that these differences make someone unique in the way that MAGA doesn't want people to be unique, I guess. Because we think about sex chromosomes as being this dichotomous thing when it really isn't. There are so many variations. You can also have an aneuploidy where you only have, if you just have a Y, you can't survive that. However, there's where you have a sole X chromosome as well. Mm. I want to also talk about one other case that I've heard of where even when you're looking at these, a MAGA person might be like, okay, well, those are genetic disorders. They still are considered, you know, like a person with a Y is still considered a male. Nah, okay, let's get into this. There was a person, and this is not as uncommon as you might think it is, went to the doctor because they had some masses in their ovaries, and it was like, okay, let's get these checked out. Well, this person has a small uterus, small ovaries. Everything is kind of underdeveloped in this person who's, you know, I don't want to give too much information away from what I read. But anyway, the masses that are inside of them are actually underdeveloped testes. So this person has both testes and ovaries and a uterus. Their chromosomes say XY. That's it.
Hmm.
Just your standard male typical chromosome set. But they have XY chromosomes. It completely undoes even any argument that MAGA have might against these other genetic abnormalities, because how do you explain that one, right? That's why the misconception here is that sex determines gender. Nope, it doesn't. And sex sometimes doesn't even determine sex. So it's way more complicated than we all think. Let people be who they want to be or who they were born to be, because that's their right. And it's not bothering you, and get over yourself.
So, yeah.
None of our listeners are like that, but if they want to show somebody this 5-second snippet, I'll gladly
support it.
Allow them to do that. So yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's what I want to talk about. So I learned a lot in one of my previous jobs about genetic disorders.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about it a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I think that was a good one to bring up, especially in today's times.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I had one more, but it's probably something I've already discussed on here and something a lot of people know me for. Whether that's good or bad, screw it. That's who I am, and that's okay. We're going back to the critters side of these misconceptions. The common one that I keep hearing is that honeybees are dying out.
Mm.
You see where I'm going? You see it? Feel the road? All right. that they are in need of our help or they will go extinct. Well, this isn't really true, or at least not all of it. And let's look at what is true. Honeybees are important for pollination efforts of some crops all over the world with current agricultural practices. They do help us produce here in the U.S. a variety of crops, such as almonds and citrus being some of the biggest crops that honeybees are shipped around the country for pollination services. Honeybees do face a variety of diseases and issues that they must overcome, including hive beetles, wax moths, varroa mites, tracheal mites, and other predators and pests. American fowl brood disease, European fowl brood, Nosema, fungal diseases, and other diseases, not to mention detrimental effects of pesticides. Thankfully for them, there is a lot of funding and research focused on helping them combat various diseases, even breeding stronger lines that can better deal with one or another of these previously listed issues. While some of these issues are newer than others and have caused dips in the overall total number of hives in North America, there's still an overall trend up in honeybee hives in the millions. They are nowhere close to dying out right now. Honeybees are originally from areas in Eastern Europe or parts of Asia. Here in the U.S., they are considered invasive by some, but most importantly, they are a form of livestock. And honeybees found in the wild here, like if you see them and for some reason think they don't belong to a nearby hive, they are often referred to as feral hives. I guess by a nearby hive, I mean someone's hive in their backyard. They all are part of a hive. Like feral cats, they have escaped from captivity and have set up residence in the wild. Honeybees are not dying out, but native bees are. These include bees such as the rusty patch bumblebee and others not officially listed yet. Native bees are taking the greatest toll as habitat is destroyed, pesticide use continues to go up, and invasive species, such as the honeybee, compete for resources and introduce diseases. I have, this cannot be the first time I've discussed this on this podcast, but I'm happy to revisit this theme and fight this misconception that is out there.
Beautiful. Yeah. No, I appreciate you throwing the native bees are absolutely at risk.
Oh yeah, I mean they're the important ones for native ecosystems and the survivability of a lot of native plants. They are the ones that we should be protecting here in North America to encourage biodiversity.
Yeah, but those honey lobbyists in D.C., they're really
yeah.
There's probably an actual lobby for them, but
big honey.
big honey.
I mean, somehow the honeybee is the face of Save the Bees, and they're like the ones that need it least. That is today's episode. One thing I did mean to shout out earlier in the episode is that I've been reading a really cool book, and maybe it'll lead to future episode related themes. But I highly recommend this book called Crossings: How Road Ecology is Shaping the Future of Our Planet by Ben Goldfarb. So if you are looking for a new book, one that's a little depressing, but also very interesting. And by depressing, I mean like just seeing human impact on nature and how that's bad. Shocking. It's a good book. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of people doing good in the book, though, too.
Yeah.
So.
I haven't read it, but I'm adding it to my list.
It's on Audible if you prefer listening to books. I do that probably more than physically reading them myself.
Hey, that counts. Audiobook reading is reading.
Yeah, I was going to say, or is it just listening? Which one's better for you? Is one better for you?
From what I've heard, now I haven't done any actual, like, you know, primary resource gathering for this, but there really is no difference.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess both of them, you're either reading words or hearing words, and it's up to your mind to come up with an image.
Yeah.
The only downside to me, well, and this probably happens if I physically read or listen, I will space out. It's going to happen to me regardless of what form I'm going through the media in, but I drive a lot, so listening is safer while driving than reading physically.
Yeah, I'd love to see you talk your way out of that one, officer. I just believe that reading is better for you than listening. So.
Yeah.
Oh, love it. Okay. Well, very good. Are you going to slap some magic with me later?
Are you going to do the how-how? But yeah.
Well, yeah, of course I'm going to do the how-how.
Oh, okay.
But I wanted to include this in the episode.
Oh, yeah. Let's slap some cards. All right.
Okay. All right. Love it. How-how.
How-how.